Once you've had a glimpse, there's no way to turn back. No way. Big self. Big Zuko. Forever. Almanac.
Hello there, Martians and Venusians, and welcome to the latest brow furrowing, eye raising, monocle dropping, trimester stopping. That's right. If you are experiencing a pregnancy at the moment, you should stop listening to this podcast immediately for the safety of you and your future child. The latest episode of Big Zuko's Forever Almanac, a chronicle of reminiscences. I am your host, as well as tour guide through Zuko Town, Daniel Kurland. And I had a rather distressing time reading the newspaper this morning. The reason I was reading the newspaper was because it was the final installment of the Sherman's Lagoon and Foxtrot crossover comic that had been happening all week in the funny section of the paper. It was the final installment of a series that was proving to be largely disappointing so far, and a huge dilution of both brands that didn't seem like it would appeal to any fan base. This misfire was additionally upsetting to me because the sour taste left in everyone's mouths from this crossover would no doubt cease any hopes of greenlighting the Hagar the Horrible and Broomhilda crossover I had been trying to make happen. It'll happen in time. Maybe not this year, but it'll happen. I'll make those two finally fuck. But because I was stumbling through the newspaper, I happened to glance across the obituary section and saw the bold typeface of Lauren Lariat staring back up at me. We had dated. We had history. I never read the paper, let alone obituary, so it was especially prophetic that the one day that I randomly, or not so randomly, did, I saw what I saw. Maybe every day the paper would contain something for me, if I just looked. There was Lauren, dead, from what appeared to be a fire. Jesus, that's awful. The history that Lauren Lariat and I had was that we dated for a span of time, and Lauren had a cat. Now, I'm not really a cat person, I like dogs, but I wouldn't even categorize myself as a dog person either. I liked cats less than I liked dogs, was the fact of the matter, and I especially didn't find myself thinking about them when I wasn't around them. But, because I was dating Lauren, and I was around this cat all the time, he started to get into my consciousness. I was thinking about him. Thinking about cats, whether I liked it or not. So when December rolled around and holidays were all in fashion, I found myself blurting out, "Yar meow cuz," in reference to Lauren's feline. You know, like yarmulkes, but for cats. For Jewish cats. I'm Jewish. So I made this joke about yar meow cuz, and made a tiny little one for him, decorated with mice and all of that, but thought that was it. When Lauren heard about it, though, she nearly lost her mind. She thought yah meow cuz were a great idea, amazing even, and insisted that we should pitch it to some pet supply company or novelty store, that it could even inspire its own line of religion-based cat toys. Crucifix scratching posts, shofar-shaped dog whistles, the usual. So it came to the moment when we were pitching yah meow cuz to the bigwigs over at Schrodinger's, the cat accessory company, and they were into it. They liked my stupid non-idea, and as Lauren droned on about branding and ancillary markets, I just kept thinking about how all you need these days to succeed is a fucking cat and a general understanding of how puns work, that I didn't hear her taking credit for my stupid non-idea. I was too dumbstruck to even know how to respond and argue with her, but she told them that while I was an integral partner to the Yar Meow Cuz family, that it was still her idea. We had been dating for 6 months, but Lauren had never fucked me like that before. I exploded at Lauren afterwards, after they had bought the idea in the room. Lauren said that because it was her cat, it was her idea. If I had never been dating her and been around that cat so much, I'd have never come up with the product, which admittedly is probably true, but that accordingly it was her idea, but that I'd still be working with her. That I shouldn't be upset. The glorious vision of Yar Meow Cuz would still get to be enjoyed by the world, regardless of who gets the credit. And she said it all with such sincerity plastered across her face, not a drop of sarcasm amongst it. And I wanted to break up with her, and I wanted to destroy her, but I didn't have a job at the time. I needed the money. I needed work, and it didn't seem wise to break up with Lauren and then continue to work alongside her for an unspecified amount of time. So, I accepted. Now, make no mistake, Yarmulkes and what Lauren was doing with it was hardly the second coming of catnip or anything. It was obviously a niche fad item, but she was going to try and milk it for as long as she could, and why not? But as my first and only year at Yarmulkes began to come to an end, Lauren Lariat and I had built this business on a foundation of venom, with pipes that ran bile. We hated each other. We couldn't hide this fact, and business meetings became unofficial therapy sessions as we vented our bullshit as other employees got paid to look away and adjust their collars. But as this relationship still slowly began to rot and die, the rhythms and motions of our relationship still echoed through. We'd still have sex in spite of hating each other. We'd still get brunch in spite of never breaking eye contact with her food. This innocent couple that used to play with their cat and make up novelty items for it wished for each other's deaths on every exhale, and one morning I just couldn't take it anymore and quit. It was while I was on my way to work, and on the side of the road I saw a piece of roadkill. A dead cat. And I smiled. I smiled the largest I had in months because I remembered I don't like cats. I hate them, and here I was working at a cat company for a woman who stole my own dumb idea right from under me. And so I just turned around and never showed up. Never went back. Lauren later went on to develop the burqa, a burqa for Muslim parrots to wear, and then I stopped following her and her empire she built off. And now she's dead. From a fire, apparently. The company obviously going through some turmoil at the moment while they scramble to find a new leader. I didn't think of myself thinking of the regime change going on at Yarmulkes, a subsidiary of Schrodinger's, but rather one of the storied entries out of Big Zuko's old Forever Almanac. And let me just say, while the relationship that Lauren Lariat and I went through saw some tough times, it's nothing compared to some of the ones that Zuko endured, particularly the one from this chapter, a little story titled 24 FPS. Fucks per second. It's the briskest day of autumn of the year so far, in a year that has so far been making its presence known by having particularly brisk autumn days. No ice cubes with this weather, no need. My girlfriend, Abigail Kremling, and I had just finished watching the porno Fluid Party 5. I've been watching a lot of pornographies lately, which means by extension that Abigail has been watching a lot of pornographies lately, which means by extension that Abigail and I have been fucking a lot lately. I've been having trouble finding work, and while my typewriter's toner has needed to be changed twice forth from all the writing I've been doing on spec, nothing seems to be panning out. Not even my Major League Baseball erotic fanfiction, which I was guaranteed would appeal to a certain strong vocal, albeit minuscule, demographic. But in spite of all the tireless hours I threw away recklessly into baseball history and minutia, no one cared. So while I do spend a lot of my days banging that typewriter and then banging my head, it's been a welcome release to throw my days away to the empty vacantness of pornography too. Today was the day of the latter. The lights that needed to be changed blinked in our bedroom, the television signal fizzling every 90 seconds, the radiator in the corner letting out an intermittent hiss that had long been tuned out by us and for even longer accepted as normal. All of this mixing with the sound of strangers having sex off the videotape in the VCR. All of these problems individually being nothing, but together crescendoing in a droning reminder that I needed a job, and I needed money, and I needed a way to not become the dispensers of dishonest fluid that glowed on my television screen. But then I thought, would this be the worst fate, having sex on tape? Or could it in fact be the way to fixing everything? If Abigail and I made a sex tape and sold it, perhaps that income could hold us over until I found steady writing employment, or at least stave off the wolves for some amount of time. The problem was, who would want to buy a sex tape of two no ones? What was the appeal? The catch? We would need to find a way to make our sex tape stand out amongst the rest of the plentiful porno of the market. Through the unintentional advent of watching so much pornography lately, likely combined with my general negativity lately from my lack of employment, I've noticed the same rhythms, pacing, and problems throughout them all. They're lazy, which is surely not a shock to many people out there, especially when their selling points, or points, rather, is not on the artifice, but rather, the orifice. The bucking bodies bouncing around on the video. Could it not be more, though? It would need to be for Abigail and my tape to have a fighting chance, but was originality and innovation what the porno crowd wanted? In the brief conversations I had with the owner of Randy Vids, Mr. Randy Vids himself, when I was procuring new tapes, that if pornography tried new things, took new efforts, people would be into it, as long as it was still providing the tried and true formula of a penis being stuck inside a vagina. While Randy Vids was surely not the utmost expert on the topic, he did have his finger on the industry's pulse. And clitoris. I returned home with my latest acquisitions, Spring Break Suck Bag Strike Back 7, and Fiona's Asshole, and saw Abigail doodling in her notebook. With her being artistically inclined, this was hardly a rarity. She had drawn a series of small horses in the corner of her notebook's pages, and she flipped it back and forth as she ruminated on what to actually draw, the horses in the corners galloping to life and creating motion, while she tried to jumpstart her brain to do the same. And then it all hit me right away. I knew what we'd do. "Stop motion," I yelled out, and upon Abigail's confusion, I sat her down and began to try and simply explain my most complicated plan. We'd make a porno, a stop-motion porno, a wildly different, crazy, artistic porno that would get everyone off sexually and mentally and break all sorts of ground. And why not sell the thing, make all sorts of money, and fix all of our struggles in the process? And she wasn't against it. She listened to me explain this idea and eagerly waited to ask to learn more. I knew that Abigail was no prude, hell, we'd filmed ourselves having sex before, but I was surprised at how easily she was taken into this idea. She was pitching ideas to me by the end of our conversation. While we had both never heard of such a porno being done before, we sent letters out to various porno companies asking them if they had ever embarked on or considered such a thing, but in the meantime felt it was probably wise to just get started on it all. The plot of our film was simple enough. A pizza man goes blind and needs women to tell him how large his penis is. But the plot wasn't the point, and when we actually started breaking down the math of how the stop motion would work, we quickly realized the scope of this project. Essentially, in stop motion, you're laboriously moving a tiny increment, taking a picture, moving another tiny increment, taking a picture, and so forth, creating the illusion of movement. What this meant for Abigail and I is that we were deconstructing every single sex act down into incredible steps, mechanically breaking them apart as our camera snap, snap, snapped away at us. We knew that this project would take a long time to complete, where mere minutes of film would take upwards of hours to successfully shoot, and that was just for something simple like missionary, but it was sex. In the end, it was all sex, and if we had to fall into a black hole of something, it might as well have been that. So we got started, naive and ambitious, like all the people that blaze trails in the sex industry, and we spent our first day, an 8-hour shoot, on Abigail simply undoing my belt and pulling my jeans down. This was going to be harder than we thought. The footage looked great, though. Harryhausen meets Russ Meyer. A month had passed. We had put a month into this so far and merely gotten a blowjob on film. Something we didn't properly assess at all. Something we didn't properly assess at all was the concept of ejaculation. Due to the nature of filming, it works out to, and take my word for this, that about 13.25 ejaculations are needed to contain one full money shot in the stop motion format. Wrapping your mind around that concept alone gives you an idea of the labyrinth we had gotten ourselves into. And while we couldn't have been happier when after a month of filming, a representative of WET Entertainment, that's WET with 5 T's, but I don't need to tell you that as they're one of the leading distributors of adult entertainment, threw us a life preserver. Gary Darren of WET told us that he had received our letter inquiring about stop motion pornography, and that no, they've never done such a thing. But the idea fascinated him, and he would love to sponsor and fund our project and release it when it's done. He'd give us a budget, better equipment, and even a crew to shoot it if we wanted. We showed him the footage we had shot so far, and he said that he loved it in a way that felt phony, but the glaringly obvious erection in his pants led me to believe that he was being honest with us. After watching our tape, he only made eye contact with Abigail for the rest of our conversation. He saw that I noticed this and chose not to care. We signed contracts, he wrote us checks, and then drove away in his expensive car at an irresponsible speed. We were 4 months into filming at this point, and Gary Darren and the generous people over at WET Entertainment's investment hadn't done much to maintain our sanity. Sure, we had money, much of it, but I certainly didn't have time to be doing any writing lately. Essentially, all of our free time was being funneled into this porno. We had at least gotten to the actual sex in the film at this point, but barely. My hands at this point were long calloused and rough from all the repeated touching and caressing we were doing. As both mine and Abigail's hair grew over the months, we were at first frantically cutting hair on the fly on set in order to maintain continuity. Eventually, though, as we saw how long we would be working on this, it just became smarter to invest in various wigs to wear. Random haircuts we had at a time when we brashly entered into this, now being our constant default, continually seeing ourselves like how we looked in the past, forced to be stunted. Month 8 reared its head, and at this point, everyone was grateful for those goddamn wigs. Continuity was driving us insane at this point to a degree that we never even considered previously. Scenes where Abigail gets slapped or choked that happened months ago still need to have consistent bruise marks because in the scene, it's only a mere minutes later. Last week, I badly cut my hand while slicing a square watermelon, needed to get stitches, and as a result, I now need to wear a scar cover on my hand every day because in the previous 11 minutes of footage, my hand doesn't have a scar. Meanwhile, Abigail and I didn't even know what a relationship was. So much of what we were doing became broken down to a job that it seemed like we were never having sex off camera because we were always having sex on camera. Abigail was chafing constantly. After needing to ejaculate over 13 times for every one time my pizza character did, orgasms no longer gave me joy. It was the silent still aftermath that was now my favorite part of coming. There were more than a few occasions when the occurrence of an orgasm similarly sent a pang of pain through my lower body, and I'd see a mixture of brown floating amongst my jism. Blood, the doctor said, nothing to worry about, that I probably just ruptured a vessel, and if I take it easier on the old trouser snake, I should be just fine. I wasn't trying to make history, was I? They had no idea. My genitals gently ached throughout my days, just something else I'd learned to live with. We were 11 months in, and at this point, at least past the halfway point of the film, and end was eventually coming. Apparently. We of course would have just walked away from the porno at this point if we hadn't been binded by Gary Darren's contract, and before all of these millions, billions even, of thrusts had been captured on film, before the liters of semen that had been spent through the course of it all, moving slowly, the individual spermatoza could be seen from conception to grave, or hurtling a fraction of a second through the locked-off camera. Before all of that, it's amusing to think that one of the selling points to all of this originally was that wouldn't it be fun to just be constantly fucking? We're intentionally rebelling against the system now. I got a tattoo on my arm of the word continuity that now needs to be covered up in makeup every day, because that's not what I look like. Trying to somehow change in a system that's forcing stasis upon us. The few times I still saw Abigail ever drawing, she was drawing penises. Sad-looking penises that dominated the page as better ideas got buried underneath, and I was sure that something inside of her was broken too, even if she didn't have blood mixing with her semen. 2 years came and went. We had to take a hiatus because Abigail got pregnant. I suppose that was an inevitability with the amount of fucking that had consumed our lives and the buckets of sperm we now dealt in. Pregnancy is not something that can easily be swept under the rug with makeup, though, and so a hiatus occurred. A hiatus that was the cruelest of breaks as I experienced tremendous joy, not because of the marriage between Abigail and I that took place. It was mostly perfunctory as a result of the pregnancy and a last-ditch attempt to trick ourselves into loving each other again, but joy because I was writing again. Successfully selling one-offs of a series I've been toying around with called The Adventuestrian, and validation and acceptance that my life is not just an endless fuck is likely what kept me going these past few months. Accordingly, that also made the return to our sexual prison all the more debilitating when it did happen. Those dreams and reassurances stripped away as I stripped down to perform doggy style for 6.5 hours. 2 sets of empty eyes blinking in front of a camera. Abigail's recent C-section scar, just another piece of history hidden under stage makeup, keeping us regressed. Life didn't become any easier as the film progressed, us slowly moving further along, capturing climaxes on camera, condensing our milestones and trauma within spitting distance. At 1744 in the film, Abigail was childless, and at 1745, the woman on screen was a mother. At 2413, Abigail and I were married, and at 2414, the couple fucking on camera were divorced. Months of time hiding away in the milliseconds between frames. At 1645, Abigail had never been in rehab. At 2611, she was just getting out for the first time, and by 4117, she had been in and out of facilities almost half a dozen times. This film, the only thing left in our lives that lasted and didn't change. We greet each other in the morning and when we left, but there were empty gestures from empty vessels, the results of being forced to have sex with someone you no longer love. The fact that that love might have actually thrived and not decayed if it wasn't put into such a pressure cooker. It doesn't matter, though. It really doesn't. A stagehand doodled storyboards on a portable whiteboard, and from the twisted, confused way that Abigail watched him doing this, I knew that she would never draw again. That piece of her was gone. We originally started filming the project in the apartment that Abigail and I were living in, but after the divorce, we moved apart naturally, so now we need to go to this old apartment several times a week and pay the new tenants to allow us to film there so the illusion of cinema can be maintained. Again, previous frivolous decisions now cementing themselves in our lives, trapping us to never get away, paying to go into the place that birthed these bad memories in the first place, but it's almost over. We'll be done this month. The only reason we're fucking now is for our freedom, for escape. And even if we weren't forced to finish this through our contract, we wouldn't have run away. I wouldn't have, at least. Then all of this would have been in vain. None of it would have mattered. The thousands of hours of work blowing up in an instant, not unlike an orgasm. But we'd be finished in a month, and nothing turned me on more than that. And then suddenly, it was over. The final cum shot, a very untasteful splattering on Abigail's now remarried breasts that took the better part of the afternoon to finish, and then it was done. We both wiped off the fake bruises and artificial spank marks that originally happened years ago to us when we were different people. I'd never be back in this apartment. I'd likely never have sex with Abigail Kremling, now Abigail Kremling Haynes, again. Hell, I might never have sex with anyone again. I've certainly had more than my share in a lifetime by now. It's certainly something that doesn't fascinate me the way it used to. Gary Darren was there on the final day with us. His gaze now less interested in Abigail, now that years of drug use, childbirth, and perma-fucking had worn down her edge. He continued to throw buzzwords and excitement our way and insisted we go out for drinks to celebrate the milestone and the future. He brought up how the original letter I sent him was one of the most impassioned, inspired pleas towards pornography that he had ever heard. Now I just waited for his mouth to stop moving so I could walk away from this devil and never have to deal with him again. A month later, Wet Entertainment, and that's actually Wet with six T's now, they added another one over the years, branding, you understand. A month later, Wet Entertainment released our stop-motion pornography. 17 copies sold. And in the end, it looked like people just want porn. They don't care about the artifice or design behind it. 17 copies sold, which wasn't even enough to cover the cost of my divorce with Abigail. Wow, right? I had no idea Zuko was a porn star. Insane. Well, I guess porn star is stretching things. He did one, but holy cow. I'm assuming that Zuko left the name of the film out in his entry as a means of keeping some anonymity and not having to relive the traumatic portion of his life, but with a little bit of research, there's still only one stop-motion pornography. It's called Stop and Go Fuck Party. And honestly, it looks pretty good, you guys. The effect actually works pretty well. It's cool. I mean, it's not making the porn any better, but like, they did it, at least. I think I can find the frame when Abigail first has her C-section too. Jeez, I wonder if Randy Vids ever ended up carrying it. That would have been a crazy moment for Mr. Vids. It's nice to see, though, that through all of that, Zuko did return to writing, and his life wasn't destroyed forever. It seems less unlikely that Abigail Kremling turned herself around, but you never know. I hope so. Man, they have a child together. But okay, my relationship I was talking about with Lauren Lariat, we were stuck in our own stop-motion porn too. Even if we weren't slowed down and imprisoned by time like Zuko and Abigail were, it's important to recognize these moments and not get lost in the shuffle. Otherwise, you might find yourself in a reverse cowgirl position that never ends. I'm Daniel Curlin, and this has been Big Zuko's Forever Almanac, a chronicle of reminiscences, and until next time, the chronicle is chronic closed.
Once you've had a glimpse, there's no way to turn back. No way. Big self. Big Zuko. Forever. Almanac. Forever.